right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And this turns up. That's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX. Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology.
And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Patrick Creighton. Look in my eyes, what do you
see? This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. On the HRMP listener line, on the text line, on X Twitter, at PCreighton1. Josh Evans on the other side of the glass at the Master Controls. On the X Twitter, at IamJChevy. On the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975.com, the 975 app. Tell Google to Alexa, play ESPN975. Take us with you everywhere you go. You know you want to. Chaz McCormick with his 19th stolen base of the season. He is one shy of being a 2020 player who doesn't play every day. I just want to say, if you were a full-time player in center field for any team in baseball and you hit 285 and you had an OPS of about 870, and you were a 2020 player, you started the All-Star game. Just an idea. It's the kind of player Chaz has been this year. Now, earlier tonight in the Monday Night Football game, the Browns and the Steelers, Nick Chubb suffered an absolutely hideous injury. It literally looked like his entire knee came apart. He got hit and upended, and his leg went the other direction. And they fear he has suffered a devastating knee injury to the same leg that he suffered a massive three injuries to all at once back in 2015. Nick Chubb had, I think, torn PCL, LCL, like just wrecked his knee in 2015, dislocated. They fear he did. He had a massive, massive injury in tonight's game. He was carted off, and the network did not show the replays because they thought it was too hideous. It was. I saw a copy of the play on Dove Kleiman's account. It's not good. And certainly hoping and praying and wishing the best for Nick Chubb, because that looked like a terribly serious injury that hopefully will not change the course of his career. How about Jeremy Pena with a knock? And this game is tied in the bottom of the sixth at 3. Now, the week that was in the NFL, let's start with the teams that that matter to the Houston Texans, the teams that are in their division. We will start with Tennessee Titans, who hosted the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego in a game that the Chargers were favored to win. They were expected to win. I mean, the Chargers were 2.5-point favorites in this game at the end, but, you know, the Titans were not really didn't do anything on offense in their first week, and the Chargers scored 34 points. And you're like, okay, they're going to score a ton here. The Titans are not very good. Yet, once again, Los Angeles Chargers finding ways to steal defeat from the jaws of victory. Here is how it ended.
From the near hash mark, the rain is lightened up. Good snap, good hold. Kick is on his way. The game winner, and it is good! The Tennessee Titans in overtime have knocked off the L.A. Chargers 27-24. No better feeling, Jay?
Well, to come in, you know this guy has been in this situation, so he knows how to control his emotions. But every time you hit a game winner, that is the greatest feeling in sports.
Thanks to our friends at CBS for that call. As the Titans beat the Chargers 27-24, and then after the game in the post-game press conference, Chargers head coach Brandon Staley sounded like a guy who is feeling some heat.
A lot of people sort of wondered whether that Jacksonville loss would
carry on. I'm not worried about the Jacksonville loss. The Jacksonville loss hasn't carried on to the season whatsoever. If you've seen our training camp or you've seen the way we've played in the first two games, it hasn't had an impact on our team whatsoever. Our team is connected. Our team has played its heart out in two games, and we've lost two tough games. But it has nothing to do with the Jacksonville game. And if you ask anyone in our locker room, it has nothing to do with the Jacksonville game. And that's just the truth. It's a convenient storyline for you and for everybody else, but it's not the truth. We've lost two tough games, but the guys in that locker room, the men in that locker room, they are finishers and they have what it takes, and we're excited to prove ourselves.
Courtesy of the L.A. Chargers, I don't know about you, but that certainly sounded like a guy who's a little wound up. Feeling a little pressure, feeling a little squeeze. When you are, I need to snap at the reporter and I think I'm going to school you type thing, instead of, yeah, no, next. You know you're about to get a call from upstairs that says, how the hell did you blow this game? Why do you keep blowing games? Our quarterback is too good. We have too much talent. We should be smoking the Tennessee Titans.
Do you think he makes it to the end of the season?
The only thing he has in his favor is that Chargers ownership is notoriously cheap. And they have shown in the past, they will stick with a coach that's not the right coach, strictly to avoid paying him not to coach. They would rather, whereas every other team will fire the coach to go in the right direction, they will stay in the wrong direction to not have to pay a second coach. They've shown that before. I mean, this is the same ownership group that once upon a time fired Marty Schottenheimer after going 14-2. To bring in Norv Turner, who goes 9-7 every year, and they kept going, oh, no, it's okay. You're the coach. You're the coach, Norv. Because they gave him a contract, and they weren't going to pay Norv to not coach. So they just stuck with him. And well, they hoped for the best. The one thing he has going for him is the Spanos family is notoriously cheap asses. And there's a whole like Spanos family war going on because two of the members of the family are accusing a third of frivolously draining the family trust and spending it on all kinds of nonsense instead of using it for what it's supposed to be used for. So there's a whole war going on with the Spanos family. They're top three worst owners in the NFL. They are top three. But the Titans getting themselves a victory. Meanwhile, the Jaguars, they had a take on the Kansas City Chiefs. And last week, we saw the Chiefs lose a game because, well, they didn't have a receiver that could actually catch a pass. It didn't matter if it hit them in the hands, if it hit them in the numbers. Hell, it hit one guy in the face. Didn't matter. They couldn't catch it. Well, Travis Kelce was back, and Chris Jones was back. What did that mean for the Kansas City Chiefs? Well, you might have heard about some rumors regarding Travis Kelce and a certain pop singer. Well, Ian Eagle, he heard the rumors, and he made sure to get him in on this Kelce touchdown.
Low snap. Mahomes moving pocket. Mahomes floats it up. Caught! Touchdown, Travis Kelce! Kelce finds a blank space for the score.
Well done, Ian. He never misses a beat. Ian Eagle's one of the best. Never, ever misses a beat. Now, in another game that I know always appeals to the Houston faithful, that would be anything involving the New England Patriots. And much like you, I love when the Patriots lose. And they hosted the Dolphins on Sunday Night Football. And this was an important game for me because I put way too much money on this game because I was all Dolphins all the time. And I hate the Patriots. But after the Patriots scored 14 in the fourth quarter, came close to putting up 21 and tying the game. But they didn't. Dolphins with a 24-17 win. And after the game, Bill Belichick in mid-season form.
Not too much to say after that one. Yeah, tough loss, but got to learn from it and just keep working harder and move on. So there's really not too much to say.
Man, all I know is I just wanted him to say, Jets, Jets, Jets. Like once upon a time, Seattle. Seattle. Bill Belichick in mid-season form of press conferences. Patriots, back-to-back L's. It's the first time the Patriots are opening the season 0-2 since 2001, and Tom Brady wasn't the starter yet. Though he would become the starter later that year, like the next day. After in a game against the Jets. I think it was Mo Lewis hit, blasted Drew Bledsoe on the sideline and knocked him out for a long, like, locked him out for weeks. And Tom Brady wound up becoming the quarterback because Bledsoe got hurt. Mo Lewis destroyed him. And then they won anyway because J-E-S-T. That's always how that goes. Coming up next, it's time for Money Plays. My man Chris Dell will join us and get you your look ahead and best bets week 3 of the NFL season. Next!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir. The check is in the mail.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
It's time for Money Plays with Patrick Creighton.
Ow! Love that money!
Presented by BetUS, the original online sportsbook.
Now, get ready to take down the best money plays of the day.
Joining us on the H&B guest line right now, founder at bettingpredators.com, senior sports editor, fantasy football editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's our man, Chris Dell. What's going up, Chris?
Patrick, my man, it's Monday Night Football. Week 2's almost done, and week 3's coming up. It's all about NFL right now, and I couldn't be happy about it, man.
You know, I saw the horrible injury that Nick Chubb suffered earlier tonight, and then I realized I'm in a dynasty league. I traded him 4 days ago for 2 seconds and a third, and I feel like I won that trade right now.
It's tough, man. You know, prayers up to Nick Chubb, no matter who your favorite team is, no matter where you're at in fantasy right now. That's an injury you just don't want to see to anybody on the football field. And it's obviously a big loss. We saw the Jets lose Aaron Rodgers in a very similar fashion last week. It's unfortunate to see these injuries. I mean, Chubb's a great back, but you got to start shifting your mindset as a sports bettor, as a fantasy player, as we talk about, to how are you going to react, how are you going to try to take advantage to help yourself. And there's definitely some options. Jerome Ford's a very capable back in the Browns offense. And don't be surprised if they take a look at Kareem Hunt, who knows that system. He's still a free agent right now. I expect them to possibly bring him in for maybe a meeting to see if they can bring him, mix him in back into this offense too. So I think the Rodgers loss is greater for the Jets than the Chubb loss is for the Browns, but just the fact that even in the conversation that that's up for debate just goes to show you how valuable Chubb is to that franchise. So prayers up for him for a speedy recovery for sure.
It's an awful injury. I mean, he's a great player. And it's the same knee that he suffered a major injury to back in 2015. And you hope that it's not going to alter his career permanently, but it was tough to watch. But at the same time, when we get into how is it affecting my money, it's affecting my money positively in that particular league. And it does make us, you know, as we look ahead to week three and the Browns host the Tennessee Titans, who got healthy against the Chargers, because who doesn't get healthy against the Chargers? As you look to that game next week, how does that impact that game for you?
Well, I think that you got to look at the Tennessee Titans that, you know, they're clearly one of the best run defenses in the entire NFL, no matter how you look at it. I mean, they've absolutely shut down the two opponents they've played so far, week one, New Orleans, and this past week, the Los Angeles Chargers, who came into week – Chargers had the best run game in the entire league in week one. They were absolutely shut down in week two, even though Austin Eckler wasn't there. So I think you got to look at that as something to where you want to bet unders in the player prop market. As much as I like Jerome Ford, as much as I think Kareem Hunt can be a factor into this going forward, you have to look betting rushing unders, because the Titans for about 2.5 years now, they've had one of the best D-lines in the league. And I believe that just because this is the Browns offense, they have one of the best offensive lines in the league. Those numbers might be inflated once we hear official news that Jerome Ford will be the starter or that Kareem Hunt mixes in. So I'll absolutely be looking to play unders for the Browns. It's probably a bet I would have made even if Chubb were to play just based on the matchup alone. But overall, I think that you have to look under no matter who wants to get the start for Cleveland in week three against Tennessee.
Chris, there's another game that popped out to me is next week, Monday Night Football, the Rams and the Bengals. This game's in Cincinnati, but comments earlier today by the Bengals head coach talking about, hey, Joe Burrow may not play next week as he re-aggravated his calf injury. The Bengals are 2-point favorites in that game, and the Rams have a young rookie receiver who seems to be doing his best Cooper Kupp impersonation. Is this a game to look at right now and grab that line?
Yeah, I think that I would take personally the Rams here. Now, look, +2 is not a number that you want to get, right? But if the Bengals don't have Joe Burrow in this game, you're going to see this flip to a Rams being the money line favorites in this ball game. And I was very concerned about Joe Burrow going into week two. You saw that the timing actually started to pick up. He probably had a really good second half. He put a couple touchdown drives together after the Bengals went scoreless in the first half against Baltimore. But I think you have to look at this. He was limping off the field after the game. And you think about those comments that Jamar Chase made in the preseason that he told reporters, like, hey, I don't think you're going to be able to start Joe Burrow for about 4 or 5 weeks in fantasy. All of a sudden, Joe Burrow made this miraculous recovery. So I could only look to the Rams here. And +2 is a number you don't want because you want to play that key number at 3. I would personally look to play the money line on Los Angeles. You can get plus money on that depending on where you shop around. Somewhere between +110, +110. And you know me, Patrick, I'm a Bengals fan, and I try to be as unbiased as possible when it comes to my team, but Joe Burrow's not right now. So it's really all about listening to the practice reports this week. But if Joe Burrow's out, this line's not going to be +2 for the Rams anymore, and especially in a primetime spot. Puka Nacua, Tutu Atwell, these no-namer guys coming into the league, they've absolutely stepped up. Matthew Stafford's a wide receiver elevator. Anyone he plays with gets basically promoted to the next level of their career. Look what he did with Megatron, Calvin Johnson back in the day. Look what he did with Cooper Kupp. There's no coincidence he's now doing that with Puka Nacua, who had 20 targets in their last game. I would absolutely look to play Puka Nacua over the receptions, because even if they lined it at 5.5, 6.5, you look at a receiver against 20 targets a game, there's no way you can continue to fade that type of usage. So those are the ways I'm going to look to bet that game next Monday night.
Chris, are there any other games as you look ahead to week three, other games that pop to you right now as we're looking ahead to week three that are on your radar?
Yeah, absolutely. I would actually look. I mean, like, we gave this out in our premium plays Discord channel. I still think it's value. New England -3 on the road at the New York Jets. I mean, look, the books are essentially telling us here that the Patriots are 6 points better than a Zach Wilson-led New York Jets team, but I think you have to look at what New England's done through 2 weeks of the season. I mean, they put up a very respectable showing in week one against Philly. And even in week two, yeah, I know it was a prime time game and they lost to the Dolphins, but they made that game close on Sunday Night Football. They fought till the end. I love the way the offense has opened things up with Matt Patricia calling plays. I mean, look at Mac Jones, 31 of 42 for 230 yards. They've got receivers getting healthier in that offense. They're using their two tight end sets with Hunter Henry and Mike Gesicki. And as good as the Jets defense is, I just see New England and Belichick absolutely scheming away everything for Zach Wilson in this game. They're going to take away Breece Hall and make Zach Wilson beat them. So not only would I look to play the Patriots on the minus three or anything better you can get than that, I'm also going to look to play Zach Wilson over the interceptions prop, even if that is going to be a juicy prop at the end of the day.
Now, I know part of what you do is, you know, as with all the fantasy football stuff that you do, you put your rankings together. Right now, who are the best teams in the NFL to you right now?
Man, it's a good question, right? Because you don't want to overreact looking at the standings. I think that when you're looking at the league top to bottom, things that you kind of say, hey, we don't want to overreact to this, but maybe there's good reason that this team is 2-0. I think you've got to look at, obviously, San Francisco and Philly. Those teams are 2-0 for a reason. They were at the end last year. Dallas, obviously, is a perennial, division contending team. But so far through these first 2 weeks of the season, I really like what I see out of Miami. You know, this is all about Tua, right? If Tua stays healthy, if he doesn't get those concussion issues, this team is extremely talented on offense. I mean, with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, that's a team that's extremely difficult to beat. So I think you got to look at them. That was a team that was making noise last year up until Tua went down. And, you know, a lot of noise has been made about concussion issues in the past for certain players. But, you know, there's no reason to think why he can't just eventually get over that issue and come back and complete a full season. If he does that, this Dolphins team is going to be tough looking to contend with, especially as they get healthier on the defensive side over these next few weeks and into the rest of the regular season. So that's one team that I like. And in terms of looking at 0-2 teams, you know, the Bengals, I would say they're in the same type of position where it's basically, you know, yes, they could be the 0-2 team from last year that started 0-2 and made the conference finals, but the Joe Burrow injury is what's holding me back from that overall. So in terms of 0-2 teams in the league, I mean, yeah, LAC is probably the one team, the Chargers, I think, they've got some talent there. And I think New England can be a little bit sneaky in terms of 0-2, wanting to make a little push, even though it's a very tough division. So I think it's almost status quo right now, but Miami could legit be that one team that winds up pushing and contending for a deep playoff run as we get towards the end of the regular season.
Chris, you talked about Tua and you know, last year when he was healthy, you know, how good the Dolphins were when he got hurt, how much they struggled. Where is a healthy Tua Tagovailoa to you in the quarterback hierarchy in the NFL right now?
Yeah, you know, he keeps going up and up, Patrick. That's a good question, because 2 years ago, before Mike McDaniel came into that system, we all would have questioned, is Tua even in the top half of the league? Obviously, the draft capital was there, and he came into the league already dealing with multiple injuries. But you see what he can do when he's got a clean pocket. I mean, even when under pressure these last couple weeks, he's been extremely effective. And the Dolphins are razor thin at running back right now. They're still going to get Jeff Wilson back from IR in a couple weeks. Raheem Mostert's probably the best 30-year-old running back in the league by a wide margin. He's making big plays in the running game at 31 years of age. And when you throw in those talented receivers into the mix, I mean, Tua's making the most of these weapons. So, you know, right now, he's playing absolutely like a top five, borderline top 10 option. He's playing better than Justin Herbert. He's playing better than Russell Wilson. You could argue he's playing better than guys like Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson. So I think right now you got to give credit when credit is due. And look, scheme is a lot. It makes a big impact in the NFL. And when you talk about Mike McDaniel coming in, a lot of people are regarding him as one of the sharpest play callers and scheme makers in the entire league. So I think you put that combo together, we see what Kyle Shanahan can get out of the quarterbacks that play for him, and we see Mike McDaniel now doing that with a former number one overall pick. And if Tua continues this upward trajectory of him with McDaniel with these weapons, he could absolutely be a top five solidified option by year's end out of 32 starting quarterbacks in this league. I truly believe that.
All right, one last one for you, and this is a polarizing subject here in the H. How good are the Dallas Cowboys? And are you, when you look at the line they've got this week coming up, are you all Cowboys on this game? It's a pretty significant line. Cowboys are 12.5 point favorites in Arizona. against a Cardinals team that has played better than it actually is, but you kind of saw what they really are second half against the Giants. What are the Cowboys to you, and that 12.5 line, does it scare you away?
You know, if I had to play it, you know, they say the gun-to-head situation, I think I'd have to play Dallas. But, I mean, our power ratings right now have them as 10-point favorites in this game. I mean, Arizona's been extremely competitive in these two games. Yeah, they blew a lead to Washington in week one. They blew the lead to the Giants in week two, but they're playing at home here. I mean, they've got nothing to lose. Obviously, I think upper management, the fans, kind of want them to lose to get that number one pick and secure Caleb Williams as the starting quarterback of the future. But at the same time, again, you know, they're at home here, and Dallas has all the pressure and Arizona has none. So I think you have to look at Arizona possibly having value. It's not something that I would bet personally, but yeah, it's a big line, and I tend to get a little cautious when you see lines that big. I think the public's going to bet heavy on Dallas, but we might see this line get up to -13, -13.5, even approach that 2-touchdown margin. So for me, it's a stay away bet, but I do think there is value on Arizona as the line continues to trickle up and up with more Dallas money coming in for sure.
He is Chris Dell, founder at bettingpredators.com, senior editor, fantasy football editor at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, with us on the HRNP guest line. Follow him on Twitter at Mad Journalist. That's Mad with two D's, at Mad Journalist. And, of course, you find all his work at bettingpredators.com and at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris, appreciate you, my man. We'll talk soon.
Likewise, Patrick. Talk to you soon, man.
Hi, Chris Dell with us here on Money Plays on Late Hits. Coming up next, do you believe in jinxes? Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now with more nougat.
You're not cooking.
Pork chop sandwiches.
Late Night Houston Sports Talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology.
And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
They continue to honor Jimi Hendrix tonight on the 53rd anniversary of his passing. This song was actually recorded in January of 1967. And it was released in 1970 in the UK and in 1971 in the US. Believe it or not, this song actually has a modest background story to it. So Noel Redding was the bass player for the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And after a show in England, New Year's Eve, he invited him to his mother's house. Because, you know, when you're broke musicians, you spend holidays with your parents. And it was cold, so Hendrix asked Redding's mother if he could go stand next to the fireplace. She said yes, but she had a German Shepherd that was standing there like, no. And that is how you get Move Over, Rover, and Let Jimmy Take Over. The song was covered by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was covered by Alice Cooper. But one of Jimmy's best songs, it's actually known, it was actually released as Let Me Light Your Fire in the UK. Why record labels would change the names of things between America and the UK, I don't know. But this was not something that was unusual to Jimmy, but it happened to him several times. This is something that he dealt with more than once. And I wonder what kind of continued influence would he have had if he doesn't pass away today in 1970. If he lives for another 15 years, 20 years, which would not be very long, 27 when he died. But if he lives to be 40 or 50, how much greater an impact does he have? How much greater stuff does he put out? And he has three studio albums. That's it. He had three. And you think about all the Jimi Hendrix songs. I could have pulled 20 Jimi Hendrix songs. And obviously I don't have enough segments to do 20 songs, but that's the kind of impact that Jimmy had. Now, do you believe in jinxes? I've had this conversation with Brian McDonald many times, who, you know, I tell him, I'm like, don't talk about a no-hitter. And he's like, no-hitter. And you want to punch him because he does that. But do you believe in jinxes? Are you somewhat superstitious when it comes to sports, Josh?
Absolutely. I'm with you 1,000%. B-Mac, I don't understand how he just blurted out to the universe and expected to happen. He's a horrible shaking person. In my boots.
He's a horrible person. Let's just call it what it is. B-Mac is a horrible person. But Giants-Cardinals yesterday, Adam Amin, and look, I know Adam Amin. Adam's a great dude. I know Adam. And Adam Amin maybe jinxed Matt Prater, at least. This is what a lot of people think. Does this count as a jinx to you?
But I love that by the young fella. I love that by the rookie. Hey, man, see what you can get away with.
So Matt Prater, who hit a 54-yarder last week, has hit more 50-plus yard field goals than anybody in NFL history. Going to try to do one right here. Ends up going left instead. He's made 72 in his NFL career. Couldn't knock that one through. Ertz could not corral the pass.
Was that a jinx after, Adam Amin says, look, this guy's got more 50-plus yard field goals than anybody in history, followed by shank. Is that a jinx to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he jinxed him. I mean, look, he jinxed the Cardinals while they were playing the Giants, so, yeah, I'm not really upset about that. Also, there was still no score at this point. The Cardinals would go on to have a 20-0 lead at the half and lose.
You know somebody upstairs made the call. Like, hey, we're not supposed to be winning this. Yank so-and-so out the game, make some adjustment. We need to lose this. I feel like somebody upstairs made a call.
But they didn't take anybody out. I mean, maybe they should have. But, you know, Danny Dimes, huge, huge second half. Look, the Giants are going to get smashed by the Niners this week. Also, Saquon Barkley is probably going to be out for like 3 weeks. So, yeah, life of the Giants is going to get ugly because – half their offense is predicated on Saquon Barkley. And the Niners' defense is going to run all over that hideous offensive line, or at least what the Giants call an offensive line. And Danny Dimes is going to run for his life on Thursday night. We know how this is going to go. Now, let me ask you another one because, you know, you see, look, Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes are 3-0, even though they should have won this week by like 50, and his team basically played like poo for 55 minutes and then pulled their heads out of their keisters and said, oh, yeah, we got to win this game. But Brett Favre, he who is very much in the crosshairs of everybody, that he was using political clout to steal money from the state welfare fund to build athletic facilities at Southern Miss. Brett Favre, who should probably do himself and the world a favor and shut the hell up, couldn't help but run his mouth, and of course running his mouth to TMZ, said he wanted to get Deion Sanders to be the head coach at Southern Miss.
I didn't realize, though, that back several years back you tried to get him at Southern Miss. So you were ahead of the curve.
I knew he would do a great job. I knew the things that we needed at Southern Miss. He checked the boxes. Attention, enthusiasm, getting people in the seats. He would have done that. And I knew that players would follow him. And not to mention, we'd have got a son who's probably going to be one of the Heisman finalists this year.
No word if he was going to pay him from the state welfare fund, which is apparently where Brett gets all the money for Southern Miss. But I'd say probably likely. I mean, why would Brett do anything on the up and up? And, you know, good move by Dion telling Brett, nah, fam, we good. I'm going to go to Jackson State where they're going to screw me left, right, and center. I'm going to win anyway, and then I'm going to give them the bird. By the way, did you see their women's basketball coach going after the documentary that was done on Dion about going from Jackson State to Colorado? They show this house by Jackson State University, and it is like the most rundown house in America. And they show this house, and they talk about, you know, how Jackson, how remember how they had no water?
Yep.
And Dion had, out of his own pocket, brought his entire team, 2 hours north, stay in hotels so they could practice and have water and have showers and actually drink water and have real food and stuff because, you know, in Jackson, Mississippi, they had this massive breakdown of public services. And this woman's like, you guys are making Jackson out to be like this terrible place and Boulder to be this amazing place. I'm like, honey, I hate to tell you this, but compared to Boulder, Jackson is a hole in the ground. I mean, let's just be real. You're talking about one of the most affluent areas in Colorado versus Jackson, Mississippi. Now, there's a lot of culture and history and music and stuff in Jackson, Mississippi. But when you can't give people running water, you're a freaking dump.
Mississippi's not the poorest state that we have in this country.
It's probably top three, though. I would bet they're top three.
I think it's number one.
If they're not number one, they're definitely top three. I think Louisiana is probably up there too, and the Dakotas are probably up there too. Let's see. What do you think poverty rates in the United States? Number one, Mississippi.
There
you number go. Two, Louisiana. Number three, New Mexico. So it's like whatever side of Texas you're on, you're poor. Followed by West Virginia, Kentucky, and Arkansas. Not your Kansas, but Arkansas. And the states that had the lowest poverty: New Hampshire, Maryland, Utah.
I can see that.
And Hawaii. I'm calling BS on Hawaii. That is the most expensive state to live in. So we can't say, oh, well, people make more than 30 grand, therefore they're not poor. That's a state where you can make $100,000 and be poor.
That doesn't sound too far off from New York, if you ask me.
Dude, I just had that conversation with my mom yesterday. Well, when are you going to come back to it? My mom, I'm never coming back to New York. When I left New York, I left a job where I was making $140,000 and I was poor. 140 grand. I was poor. I could barely cover my bills because of the amount of taxes that I had to pay. When I had bought my house, I bought a house in 2003 in New York. My taxes were $8,700 a year. When I sold the house, they were almost $16,000. I sold the house in 2012. $16,000. I did not suddenly increase my property by 7 acres. I had a quarter acre lot. And I lived in Suffolk County. I was 50 miles from Manhattan. Yeah, it didn't matter. And then, of course, you got to pay state tax and you got to pay city tax. I didn't even live in the city, but if you work in the city, bang, city tax.
That's brutal. That is, oh.
Dude, you get nickel and dimed for everything in the People's Republic of New York.
I met somebody quickly before we go to break. I met somebody down here at a car meet show, and he just moved from New York, and he and I had a conversation, and he said, yeah, I was making about $103,000 a year up there. And I said, nah, I can't make it. I got to move down south. And I said, $103,000.
Let me put this in perspective for you, okay? The house I live in now, 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, 2,800 square feet. Not the same style as the house I had in New York, but essentially the same house. 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, 2,800 square feet, 2-car garage. Not as big a piece of property, but, you know, close enough. My house in New York today is worth almost $1 million. The house I live in right now is worth about $425,000. It's the same house. That's the difference between living in the New York City area and living in the Houston area. It's $500,000. And of course you get taxed on that obscene $500,000. But that's the difference of cost of ownership to live down here versus to live up there. It's obscene. Right now in Nassau County, which is where my parents live, a one-bedroom apartment is $2,700 a month.
Goodbye.
You're not even in the city. You're in Nassau. You're all Long Island. You're in Nassau County. You're in the burbs. You're not even in Queens or in Brooklyn. $2,700 a month for a one-bedroom. Hell no. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Why am I never coming back to New York? This is why I'm never coming back to New York. Because every day that you live in New York, the state is basically telling you, bend over and grab your ankles. All right? And if you think that there is any KY or Astroglide involved, you are mistaken. All right, before we hit the break, got to tell you about our friends at BetUS. They are my favorite sports book. They are also an online casino, BetUS.com. They're the only guys that I endorse as a sportsbook in their 30th year. They are the original online sportsbook, 30th year of sports betting service, now offering for their 30th anniversary up to 30 risk-free bets. It's called Bet Protect. Nobody in the business is giving you 30 risk-free bets. You win, you get paid. You lose, you keep your money only at BetUS.com. They also have the biggest sign-up bonus in the industry. Sign up with cash, 125. 125% bonus, bam, in your account right now. Sign up with crypto, 200% bonus, bam, in your account right now. Get started today. Get Bet Protect. Get the bonuses. All you got to do, go to BetUS.com or call them. 1-800-MY-BET-US. 1-800-MY-BET-US. You want to learn how to sign up with crypto? Call them. 1-800-MY-BET-US. Go to BetUS.com. Sportsbook and casino, where the game begins.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
I'd be most worried about seeing my seminal vesicles.
Or like the Florida State seminal vesicles?
Is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology,
and by BetUS, the original online sports book.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Graydon.
Probably the most famous of old Jimi Hendrix songs, Purple Haze. Originally released in the UK March 17th, 1967. June 19th in the States. It is just, I mean, the use of the signature Hendrix chord, mixing in blues, using the sound processing techniques. I mean, this is kind of the first real, what people thought was the psychedelic version of Jimi Hendrix, but it's his ability to use what were considered undesirable sounds in music and not only turn them into something that sounded good, but harmonize them and make them magic. It was something that at the time not only had anybody done before, nobody had ever done it. Nobody even thought of it. Jimmy was so far ahead of his time. He was an absolute genius. He actually wrote the majority of this song in a dressing room of a London club right before playing a gig in December of 1966. Man, it's 53 years ago today. We lost Jimi Hendrix. Time for some WTF. And this is one that I found to be very interesting, and I also love it because so much of the talk in the NBA circles is, oh, who's the greatest point guard of all time? Is it Magic or is it Steph? Is it Magic or is it Steph? Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on a podcast was asked, so, Cap, is it Magic or is it Steph? And as usual, Kareem's answer was just pure greatness.
There was a recent debate about the greatest point guard of all time. I think I know your answer on this, but I still want to hear from you. It was involving your guy Magic and Stephen Curry. Who are you going with?
I don't think you're going to want to hear this, man.
Oh, please share.
Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
The Big O.
Why?
Yeah, I played with him. I only had a chance to play with him at the end of his career, but he was awesome. And if people had seen him play in the prime of his career and, you know, with the three-point shot, Oscar had three-point range, but he never got to play when the three-point shot was incorporated into the game. And people don't really understand how significant he was in how to play the game. But I played with him for those 4 years, and, you know, I know Steph Curry and LeBron, Kobe, you know, Magic, all those guys are superior. But I would have to go with Oscar.
It's a shame that more people today don't know about Oscar Robertson. And I felt this when you hear Kareem say it's Oscar Robertson, and the host's like, oh, he has no clue. He has no clue about Oscar Robertson's career. You know, and other than people who were following when Russell Westbrook was breaking Oscar Robertson's record for most triple-doubles in a season, Oscar Robertson was like the first do-it-all guard. And he was at one point the NBA Player Association president. Oscar Robertson is essentially the NBA's Curt Flood. Robertson filed an antitrust lawsuit against the NBA in 1970, the results of which led the league to have massive reforms in free agency, which at the time was extremely strict, in draft rules, and led to much, much higher salaries for the players. It also pushed him out of the league 3 years later. Oscar Robertson was out of the league by 1974. And, you know, just incredible, incredible player. And you think about how big he was. He was 6'5 and listed at 205 and probably more like 220. He had the kind of body he could play today and back guys down. And you heard Kareem say, they didn't have three-point line back then, but he could have dropped threes all day. I thought it was great that Kareem just dropped a big O. And this guy's like, okay. And he goes, oh, okay. Like, had no idea. He was just hoping Kareem was going to elaborate, which he did. But he had no answers. He had no retort. He had nothing to say about Oscar Robertson because he didn't know squat about Oscar Robertson. And I was glad to see Kareem school. By the way, Winning Time on HBO canceled after the end of season 2. Boo! I like that show. I don't like a lot of shows. I like that show. And it gets canceled. Hopefully it'll get picked up by like Netflix or Hulu or somebody, and they'll... But like, that's been a thing with like Netflix, right? They picked up Suits.
Yes, they did. Netflix did pick up Suits.
You know, so maybe that'll be, maybe they'll pick it up, and it'll get the real ending that it should have got. Does it for us today. Want to say thank you, Sam Kahn Jr. of The Athletic, Chris Dell, BettingPredators.com, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Jay Shav on the other side of the glass. We're back on Thursday. We got a couple days off here. We're back on Thursday at 8 o'clock. We'll see you then. In the meantime, see if the Astros could hold on to this 6-5 lead. Maybe extend it. That would be nice. Have a great night. It's time!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the best sports radio station in Houston.
I've got to prove that I'm the best, and I'm racing no matter what you tell me. Huh?